Hello, I'm Cheryl McAuliffe with Friends of Animals in Atlanta, Georgia, and I'm talking with Jeff Munster, who has worked at the Yerkes Regional Primate Center in Atlanta, Georgia. This is one of the 7 regional primate centers in the country. Jeff, when did you work at Yerkes?
I worked from December of 87 to October of 1990.
Okay. And what did you do there?
I was the Care Tech 1, and basically involved in cleaning the cages, hosing them down, feeding the animals 3 times a day, and assisting the vets with the retrieving of any animal that they needed for any of their surveys or their annual checkups.
Okay. Why did you quit there, Jeff?
Quitting there was a very difficult decision on my part because I had such strong attachment to the animals. But basically, I had extreme personal differences with the management. I was being treated very unfairly, and they seem to have a system there where if they don't want you there, they will find a way to get rid of you, whether they back you into a corner and you quit on your own, or whether they fire you on trumped-up charges, anything like that.
Okay.
So I finally left because I just had enough of it. There was no winning.
And what about the treatment of the animals?
From what standpoint?
How did you feel about that when you were working there, the administration's attitude toward the animals? Is that the reason that you left?
Well, in a way it was. It seemed to be such a battle to try and get the lives of these animals enriched any. I understand, you know, from it being a research center that, yes, it's not going to be like a zoo. They're not going to have the best surroundings. But I also felt like as long as they're there, why not make their lives just a little bit better? And the management just never seemed to take off on the idea. And any sort of interaction or strong friendships developed with these animals were sort of looked down upon because they were more concerned with a danger factor. For instance, you know, if you stuck your fingers in a cage to tickle an animal or play with them or whatever, all they were really worried about was whether you were going to get bitten or not, and not really whether you spent a lot of, you know, quality time with the animal.
So they didn't care if the animal got the quality time or not.
They felt like that's not what the animal was there for. It was there, you know, as part of a research project, that was the main thing, you know. And so if, you know, most of the care techs didn't, you know, give the animals more time than they should have, whatever, it just didn't matter to the management. They just wanted you there basically to feed and clean.
Did you ever see anything that you considered outright abuse?
Yes, I did.
Tell us about that.
Several instances. One care tech, who the care tech 3, which is the top level there of care tech staff, Sammy Hughley, has repeatedly hosed animals down when they would either throw feces on him or even if they bristled at him. If he walked by a cage, and there were a lot of chimps there that didn't like him. There were some that did, but a lot that didn't. And he had this sort of dominance game that, you know, he had to rule over them. That was his basic attitude. And if they even bristled at him, I'd see him stop and pick up a hose. And we're talking high pressure, you know, cold water hoses, and he'd hose the animal down.
Does it hurt the animal? Could they get sick from it? Or?
It's not going to hurt them, but it's. I don't think I would like it. They probably feel it about like any other person would feel it. I mean, a lot of cold water, you know, from a high pressure hose on you is not going to feel real good. You know, it ticks them off more than anything else. You know, they're tough animals, but it's not the best thing to do. You know, it doesn't build any good friendship.
It wouldn't really be considered compassionate care.
I wouldn't call it that.
Okay.
I've also seen abuse in the nursery where I worked for the last year that I was there. One care tech, female Dara Johnston, has been seen slapping baby chimps in the face during diaper change. We're talking about chimps that are 6 to 8 months, 9 months old.
Babies.
They're babies. They probably stand about this tall. And they wear diapers up until about 1 year of age. And there was one female chimp I remember in particular that just didn't really care for her, and I think she bit her during diaper change. But a bite from a chimp of that age is nothing serious. It just isn't, you know. They don't have quite the jaw strength that they have when they're an adult and all that. And she started slapping on the baby. I've also seen her trying to force a baby chimp to drink from a cup. And what I'm talking about there is they wean them from baby bottles to using cups. But it's not a process that I think can just happen overnight. And in this particular instance, she was forcing the chimp to drink from the cup, would not let her out of her grip until she did. Of course, the chimp isn't going to drink. She's screaming her head off.
What was her general attitude toward the spending?
General attitude? Oh, boy. I think some of them she liked. I think some of them she just didn't understand, and she considered them evil, nasty chimps that were dangerous. And I could refer to two older chimps there that were probably pushing 5 years of age before they even went out into the adult wing. And she was determined that one of them just hated her guts and was dangerous, and it just wasn't true. I went in and made very, very good friendships with both those female chimps and had no problems with them. So it's all in your personal relationship with that animal. Someone may say that's a dangerous animal and because it hates that person. But you may get along with it great, so it's hard to agree with them on that.
How about, you mentioned something earlier about them taking blankets out of cages?
Yeah, they have these foam rubber pads. And here again, I'm talking about the baby chimps. And I came in one day, the pads were all gone. Because at that point, they're still crawling around on their, you know, their hands and knees. They're not walking yet. And if they are, they're clinging to the upper part of the cage. And the pads were gone, and I found out that the night care person just decided they didn't need them, and something to the effect that they weren't going to learn to walk if they had the pads in there continuously. So he went to Karen Belinsky, who's the superintendent of animal care, and recommended that the pads be taken out, and she okayed it without consulting any of us in the nursery. And I was
would this hurt their feet or their knees?
I think it'd be a little rough on them, at least until they're older. You know, they're from the bottom of their feet are a little bit more calloused. You know, and that's one thing I got to say, which sort of ties into this about the vet department and some of their, the way they perceive these animals and what how much pain they can tolerate and all that, because sometimes they do inflict rather serious injuries on each other, and I'm referring mostly to the adults out on the adult wing there. And it seems that the basic consensus with the vets is, well, you know, they can handle the pain. They don't feel it like we do.
Can you give some examples of sometimes that might have been an injury?
I've seen several injuries, also which included at least two animals dying, one from injuries and one from stress. No injuries involved. The one that died from an injury was a female chimp. She was placed in a cage with a very nice male, but he's a rather dominant animal. And if either a male or a female shows any sort of submissiveness to him, he will either beat on them or bite them. And a lot of times, I noticed that in the case of bites, they would cut the canines on the chimps to about half size, figuring that would, you know, stop the damage. Well, it doesn't, it doesn't. They still have the rest of their teeth, and their jaws are awfully strong. If they're going to bite, they're going to bite. Mm-hmm. But anyway, this female chimp was being picked on repeatedly over and over. I pointed it out to the vets several times. She had a hole in her arm, clear down to the bone. And finally, it got to the point where one day I saw the upper side of her back, the whole upper half of her back was one big scab. And I pointed out to Brent Swenson, who was head vet at the time, and I said, could we please move this animal to another cage? And he said, well, okay, I guess so. Do you have any empty cages? And I said, well, yes. And we had an empty cage about two cages down that had been vacant for like 2 months.
And how you had been pointing this out?
This had been pointed out repeatedly, that she was just taking a beating. You know? So I was able to move her in on that Sunday, and I would say probably within 2 to 3 weeks, she was going downhill rapidly. They moved her into an isolation cage for treatment. They had her on IVs, but she died. And I know it was, you know, severe infections. It just did her in. Her system had been beaten to death, literally. The other case that I'm talking about involved probably a four and a half year old female gorilla who had been raised in the nursery, but in the company of chimps. She also had some slight brain damage, so she wasn't quite all there, but she was a sweet female gorilla and fully physically capable of everything. And they decided, well, it's just time to put her out there with the rest of the gorillas, so they took her out in the adult wing and threw her in a cage with about six other adults and some, I would call, teenage gorillas. And she didn't know what to make of it all. You know, this is a whole different situation for her, you know? I mean, these animals are huge. And she sits in the corner, doesn't eat, and she's trembling the most of the time. And I'd say probably within 2 to 3 months, she was dead.
And do you think those deaths were preventable?
Absolutely, I do. Now, I was not in the nursery at that time, but two of the other care techs that were working in there that had spent 2-3 years raising this female gorilla were just mortified that this had gone on and that the vets were not listening. Mm-hmm. Because they knew what was happening to this animal. They knew why she was reacting. She never had this problem in the nursery, but you put her in there with 430-pound silverback and some big 300-pound females and some 200-pound teenage, you know, and she doesn't know how to interact with that. She's scared to death of it, you know, but they would not listen to us. Mm-hmm. And when she died, I mean, there were some very upset people there.
Jeff, you worked with primates for how long?
About 2 years and 10 months.
Okay. And do you think they have feelings?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. They have probably the full range of emotions that human beings do. I mean, basically, they're about 98% human.
So they do experience fear and stress, in your opinion?
No, very much so. I mean, they're very upfront with their emotions.
Okay. So, do you think a veterinarian that has worked with animals for 5 or 10 or 15 years might be aware of that?
Oh, they're aware. I mean, they see these animals on a daily basis, just about, because they make rounds once a day to just check on everyone, and then they may be involved in some knockdowns for the day, too. So they know the basic emotional, you know, makeup of these animals, but yet they just seem to either distance themselves from it. Now, I've seen one vet, Elizabeth Strober, who had a favorite orangutan out there, and I think she was genuinely fond of that male. That was like her baby, so to speak. Mm-hmm. But you never see them really spending the time. And maybe, you know, because of their schedules, they are very busy and they can't. But there's no excuse for the care tech staff not to spend more quality time with these chimps.
Is that encouraged for them to spend time?
No,
it is not. Is it discouraged?
It's discouraged from the standpoint that they don't want you to get too close physically to the animals. But you have to understand that, you know, chimpanzees they're awfully tactile. You know, the touching and all that, the grooming, that's all a very big part of them. Just to stand 2 feet away from the cage and try to make a quality friendship like that, it's just not really going to happen as good as it could. You know what I'm saying?
When you were there, did you make any recommendations as far as bettering their diet or their psychological enrichment?
Yes, we did. Both Kathleen Hartman and myself mentioned the idea of adding some variety to their diet. Once the chimps are out on the adult wing, their basic diet is 3 scoops of chow a day, meaning 3 feedings, and each animal gets about a scoop.
And that's like a dog food or something?
Right. It's a Purina primate. There's a monkey biscuit chow type thing. And they get that 3 times daily. And at the 4 o'clock feeding, they have an orange thrown in with them. And that's about it. Now, I know that several years before I started there, their diet included eggs, meat, bread, fruits, some vegetables. Yeah, they had a nice variety to it. And then I guess people just said this is cost prohibitive or whatever reason we can't do this. But yet what we were coming up with for ideas for variety in their diet really would not have cost, you know, much at all. Certainly not any extravagant amount. We had mentioned maybe going to the farmer's market, getting the day-old produce, stuff that was still, you know, mm-hmm. consumable. You could eat it. It'd be mm-hmm. fine. You know, it just wasn't the freshest. It's like buying day-old bread. It's no big mm-hmm. deal, you know.
And what was their reply to that?
Absolutely not. They just had no interest in it, you know. And at least, you know, the youngsters in the nursery are given a better diet because they're given the apples and the carrots and cabbage and bananas and that type of thing, and the milk in the morning, you know. They have it made compared to the adults on the wing who just get this chow routine. And but you try to encourage them to add play toys to the cage, any sort of thing, and it just seems to be too much of a hassle. They just don't want to hear.
Were there any toys there at the facility?
In the nursery. There were some, you know, plastic bowling pins and some balls and the plastic boats. little climbing plastic houses, that kind of thing.
But for the adults, is there anything in the cage?
The only thing I ever saw, and this was right before I left, they took those 55-gallon plastic soap drums and cut them in half down the width, cleaned them out, of course. And then they put that in the cage, figuring that they can beat on it or throw it around. Well, I'd say their attention span on that might have lasted a day or so, because what else can they do with it? There's nothing else they can do.
Did you ever make any suggestions as far as the adoption, as far as toys?
I think at that point I'd just basically given up. And besides, the last year that I was there, when this became more of an issue, I was in the nursery. And even trying to get some of the niftier toys in for these guys, the management just wouldn't listen. They'd give you a catalog of toys and say, okay, pick out some things in here. And my roommate and I would make suggestions, and then they just poo-pooed the whole thing. And half the toys were sitting in a closet. And Dara was notorious for this. She would bring some of them out, like when there was a tour, maybe, of visitors coming, because the nursery was considered a highlight. And then she would put them back in the closet. And so half these toys, they never even got to see for any appreciable amount of time.
There's usually an inspection once a year of the major primate centers. Did you have, it's supposed to be a surprise tour, did you have any notice?
We always had notice. It was never a surprise. Whether it was an NIH, you know, or a site inspection, which is an on-campus thing, we always knew well in advance. And it was always funny to watch people going around like chickens with their heads cut off, you know, like, oh, we got to scrub this, scrub that. Yeah, then they make the place look as good as they could. They would even make up a tray of food in the kitchen for the adult wing with things on there that these animals weren't even getting. And covered in saran wrap, and it was such a pretty little, like, you know, gift thing. It's just so hokey, you know? And as soon as the inspection was over, it was back to being slack again, you know?
Well, what was the administration? Attitude towards the care
techs? Oh, boy. Basically, they wanted no one there that they felt would be any sort of a threat as far as being like any sort of animal activist. And they would question you during your interview. How did you feel about being in a research environment? What was your feeling about research on animals? This type of thing. And this is before you've even seen what the place looks like and what they're doing there. And of course I said, well, I guess it's fine. You know, I mean, I wanted the job at the time, so I wasn't about to jeopardize it. And I remember distinctly that during my first year or so there, any time that the vets did a knockdown, which means going in and anesthetizing an animal to do a study on it or to do its physical checkup, whatever, I would always sort of walk the other way and let some other care tech help the vets, because I just didn't like being a part of that. More because I was worried that I didn't want the animal associating that with me, because I valued the friendship so much. And I just didn't like ruining it. And I remember seeing it on paper that I was considered a threat. And they had some serious doubts about me, which I found, you know, rather ludicrous at the time, because, you know, I don't consider myself that type of person. But, as far as their attitude towards the care tech staff, I don't think I've ever seen a more unprofessional or unethical group of people in that sense, as far as their favoritism, the bias that they show towards new people, especially the ones that really care, really get into the chimps. Those people are the threats. They'd rather just have the old-timers there that come and they do their job, whether they're all together there or not when they get there in the morning, and I'll get into that in a minute. And basically, if they think you're getting too close to these animals or you're spending that kind of time with them, whatever, they don't want you there, and they will figure a way to get you out. You know, I've had a friend of mine fired on trumped-up charges. You know, I was forced into a corner, my roommate was backed into a corner, and they just do whatever they can to make your life there so miserable, your job environment, and there's no one you can turn to, you leave. And basically, all the good people end up leaving. And this is ultimately what affects the animals, because who are they stuck with?
Can you talk just for 2 minutes about the personnel that were there, some of the people that had been there for a long time?
Yes, I can. There's one fellow, he's the Tech 3 I mentioned earlier, Sammy Hughley, he's been there probably 25 years. And while he does know a lot of the things about the chimps, just behavior, things that he's learned over time, to this day, I don't think he understands really what they're about deep inside. And because he could have much better friendships with them than he does. Roy Mathis has been there over 15 years, between 15 and 20 years. And yet when that man walks down the hallway, he hugs the wall. He's scared to death of him. I have seen him. When he goes out in the morning to do the milk, he pulls a wagon with milk, and certain animals get milk. I've seen him take a cup of milk and throw it in the cage on the animal just to keep them from, or try to keep them from doing what they're going to do, whether they're going to throw on him or spit on him. In other words, he's petrified. And he's been there that long. What's the excuse? You know what I'm saying? These are people that took those jobs because they needed a job at the time. They knew nothing about the primates, but I didn't either. But at the same time, I developed a fascination, and I consider myself much more of an animal person than these guys are. And so they hang on to it because of the job. And that's it.
Did you see any substance abuse there?
Yes, I did. I've seen alcohol consumption. And bear in mind now, all this is with full knowledge of the management. They know this is going on, and they choose to look the other way because these are the people that have been there for years and years. Basically, they can do no wrong. And if they don't come in drunk, they either go out to lunch and get their drink. And one fellow in particular, who is a serious alcoholic, comes in the morning. If he hasn't had the morning drink, he's a grouch to deal with. But if he can find someone to go out at lunchtime with and get his drink, he comes back and he's okay. I've seen people, I haven't seen them do it per se, but I know the effects well enough. And I can see the signs of using coke. Crack. And I've seen, you know, like I said, those symptoms before. So substance abuse is rampant with certain individuals there.
Jeff, just to cut this short, one last question. The Yerkes Primate Center is supposed to be a model research center. What is your general overall opinion from a care tech standpoint?
Highly disappointing. I have a friend who still works within the system as a care tech. And this job, to get this job, meant everything to him a few years back. He finally got it, and it has been nothing but downhill for him, disappointment after disappointment, because of the unprofessional attitude of the people, the fact that they don't try to enrich the lives of these animals as long as they're stuck in that kind of environment. So I would say there's nothing really that much there to jump up and down about as far as what this place is doing. You know, I'm very unimpressed. That's my bottom line about it. And unfortunately, the people that come there and really do end up caring about the animals end up leaving because it's too big of a system to fight and you've got too many people against you. So what do you...
Jeff, you mentioned something you made before this about abuse to an endangered species, the orangutan.
Yes, I did. A couple instances here, I noticed that the orangutans were usually kept caged, two or three of them in one group. And a lot of times when the vets would come to retrieve one particular animal, it was a little difficult to get them separated. They would tend to cling to each other because they didn't want to go. You know, neither one of them wanted to go. But I found this method of theirs of trying to separate the animal a little bit on the disgusting side, and they would climb up on top of the cage with a large cafeteria-sized cauldron or bucket, whatever, of scalding water, and then pour it onto the animals to try and break them apart so that the vets can get a hold of them. And I would usually just walk away at that point because I didn't like seeing that. I thought there are better ways than this. They also had a BB rifle, which they kept in the superintendent's office, and they... A lot of times that was used more to maybe make an animal move from the inside to the outside, not to separate them. Just some of the adults were sort of stubborn about wanting to go anywhere. And they would pump it up maybe once or twice, fire a BB into the animal, or maybe they'd fire it empty, whatever, just to scare the animal or sting it, make it move. One other instance, which I thought was really bad, I did not see this, but another care tech that worked there did, and he told me about this. They were moving an orangutan from a treatment cage or an isolation cage, back to the transport box so it could be taken back to its main cage. And the animal did not want to get into the transport box. They're always a little leery of it. So it was hanging onto the bars of the cage. And two female caretakers there, both of them smoke. One of them applied a lit match to the finger of the orangutan in an effort to make it release its grip on the bars. So what do you say, you know, when you see something like that?
If you had protested, would it have done any good?
No. No. I've been to the management before about things like that, or really off-the-wall behavior on the part of other care techs, and they act like, oh my God, this is going on? You know. But it turns out to be a real joke, because these are the people that are their favorites. They've been there for years and years, and consequently nothing is done about it. It's allowed to slide, as you find out.
Jeff, thanks. We're going to wind this up because we know it's a long take, but thank you for listening.